I am gonna record these. Just giving you fair warning there in case you say anything controversial. You will be recorded. Could be used as evidence against you later. Just kidding.
So the session is right. Paying you to record me.
They're not paying me. I'm just doing it for free.
I get you.
So, this series is called A Christian View of Work and Career, and we started this up last week, and I want to start by just reviewing a few points. Some of you were here, and some of you may not have been here last time. One of the things that we mentioned last time that I think is important to bring up again is that our culture, and this probably is obvious to all of you, but our culture is becoming more and more secular. The values of our culture are just more and more humanistic and secular instead of Christian. There was a time in this country where possibly just by, I'm not sure why it was, but many of the cultural values happened to be Christians. It doesn't mean everybody was a Christian, obviously. But it just happens that there were more Christian values sort of in the bloodstream of Western culture as a whole, but as of American culture in particular. Of course, Europe is becoming, you know, very secular, and we're heading it rapidly as we can go in that direction. So whenever you talk about any subject, including this subject of work, you have to deal with the fact that when we go out as Christians, we're going out into a secular environment. And the secular view of work right now, the predominant view of work, is that work and career is a way to achieve your individual personal fulfillment and self-realization as a human being. And that mentality about work, that work is somehow designed to make me happy, you know, that's sort of the American mantra, right? It's even in our original document, the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Whatever makes me happy. Work has to make me happy. That's what it's all about. But originally, a Christian view of work, which is based, of course, in the soil of Scripture, is what we call a vocation. Work was viewed as a vocation. We're going to talk about this more today. And the word...
Jason, did you just skip over that work is a curse?
No, we're going to get to that.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. And work is not a curse. Work is cursed. But work is not a curse. And that's one of the points I was going to review anyway. So, but no, we're going to have a whole lesson, John, on how the fall and sin has impacted our work. So that's definitely coming. That's definitely on the radar. But the word vocation is an old Latin word that literally means a calling. And when you talk about a calling, you're talking about answering someone else's need. So like a calling, for example, is if there's a war and the military says we need men to sign up, and maybe women too. We need people to sign up for the military because we're in a war. That's a calling. Okay? So there's a need out there. And so if you sign up, you're entering a vocation. That is your vocation at that point. You're answering a call. So a call is something that you do for the sake of someone else. Your feelings and thoughts and maybe even your personal safety is secondary. I'm not saying that you know, whatever work you should do, the work that you absolutely hate the most. That's not what I'm saying at all. In fact, we're gonna make the point later that we should work according to our individual giftedness. So there can be a self-fulfilling aspect to work. I'm just saying that the secular view of work is that that's the primary thing, is what I'm getting out of it, whereas the Christian view of work is that it is a vocation. It's primarily what you are doing because others need you to do it first, and then your fulfillment will follow after that. Okay? That's a really important foundational point to everything that this whole series about work is about. So work is a calling. Other people need you to work, and so you go out and work to help them. That's really what we're saying. That's what a vocation is. So last week we also discussed the sort of the basic design for work, that work was a part of God's original design for human life, and it work itself is not a curse. Work is cursed, but work is not a curse. Does that make sense? So, and I say that because God told them to work in the Garden of Eden. It was God planted the garden, put the man in the garden to tend it, it says in Genesis. So there was some work to do right there in Eden. So the idea of paradise, according to the Bible, is not where you just lay around, you know, like in you see those old paintings where everybody's just laying on couches eating grapes, you know. That's not the biblical idea of paradise. Now, having said that, there is a day of rest, right? On the seventh day, God rested from his work. So we, you know, it's not that we work all the time, you know. But on the other hand, the perfect life is not just a life of leisure either. God intends for us to work, to have something productive to do. So before the fall, there was work. Now, the fall has impacted work, just like it's impacted everything else, and we're going to get to that in a later lesson. We also mentioned that the book of Genesis and the way that it shows God and creation and man and all of that is very different from the pagan myths of creation. There are lots of creation myths in the ancient world, and the book of Genesis greatly differs from them, and one of the primary ways it differs is in its view of God himself. The Greek gods are kind of viewed as kind of pure mind, and they're very distant and uninterested in the world for the most part, unless they selfishly can gain something from it. But in the view of God in Genesis is that God is a loving, caring craftsman, and that he lovingly creates the world and then is pleased with his work. That's very different from all the literature of the ancient world. And another really important verse in Genesis 1 is where it says that, "Let us make man in our image," God says. And so mankind is made in the image of God. When I say man, I, of course, mean both genders. I don't mean to be sexist or anything like that. We're made in the image of God. And part of that image includes the mission of work. Because when he says that, when God says, "Let us make man in our image," he then says, "And let him rule." And then later the commission is given to them that they are to fill the earth and subdue it. Okay? And that really is a commission to work. God is saying, "I have work for you to do. You are made in my image. You are to rule creation, have dominion over creation." Now, has sin impacted that? Absolutely, it has. But there's never a verse in the Bible that totally like jerks that away and says, "Oh, now you don't have." That still sticks. Now, man, of course, is fallen and sinful and in rebellion against God, and that causes all kinds of problems in the world, obviously. But that is never rescinded, is what I'm saying. Man's made in the image of God. He's the ruler of creation. He's to fill the earth and subdue it. And so God says immediately, "Get to work." That's the first one of the first things he says to Adam, and then to Adam and Eve together after he creates the woman. So meaningful work is a part of God's plan for us. We have periods of rest, but life does not consist of just leisure. Now, that's a little countercultural too, isn't it? I mean, what's the whole point of going to work in America? The whole point of going to work in America is so that you can retire and not have to go to work, right? And I'm not saying that retirement is wrong, okay? Even for those of you who are retired, all these principles still apply to you. You may not be collecting a paycheck from going to a job anymore, but that does not mean that suddenly your life should just be one completely of leisure. There should still be some kind of meaningful work, Roy, even if it's collecting tractors. You've got to have something to do, okay?
Thanks a lot, buddy.
And primarily, and this is the point that we're going to make, and here I'm going to let the cat out of the bag. The primary point of our work, whether you're retired or whether you're just getting started or whether you're a professional or whether you're blue collar, the whole point of work is that you are offering your service to someone else who needs you to do something for them that they can't do. Now, I want you to think about this for a minute. What would it take to make a chair by yourself, literally? Okay, let's think about this process. You're not going to have any help from anybody else, but you're going to make a chair. What's the first thing you have to do?
Cut down the tree.
Grow a tree. Well, maybe grow a tree, or let's say I'll even give you the tree. Okay, there's a nice big oak tree there for your whatever it is, your chair. Okay, now what do you got
to
do?
Fashion a tool to cut it.
All right, exactly. You got to cut it down unless you're going to bite it or do it with your hands, or you're, you know, Bruce Lee and you can karate chop it down. You're going to need a tool, but you don't have a tool.
You need a fro.
What? A what?
A fro.
A fro?
F-R-O-E. And you take it and you lay it against your billet, which is your piece of wood. And you lay it up there along the grain line, and then you whack it with a big heavy chunk of root, and it splits and it starts to where you wind up finally with diameter size of legs. So then you,
but you got to chop the tree down first.
No, you wait for the beaver to chew it.
Yeah, whatever. Get out of here. So you've got to make a tool. What's the first thing you got to do to make a tool?
Get some iron.
You got to get some iron. Let's say you find some iron. Let's say somehow you know where some iron is. What do you got to do to get the iron out of the ground? You got to dig it out. But the problem is you don't have any tools.
You have a tool.
See your problem here?
Well, what? You can never have too many tools. You can, however, have too many wives.
That's so absolutely true, Roy. Yeah.
Tools are meet God's approval. He likes tools.
But see, my point is that you could never even do something as simple as making a chair completely by yourself. It wouldn't work. It just wouldn't work. Now, if you could make a chair, Josh, right? But you would go to the hardware store and you would buy the wood that somebody else already chopped down and probably cut down for you. You would buy a tool that somebody else forged. You see what I'm saying? We're all dependent on other people to do work for us, because you can never, ever possibly in your entire lifetime do all the work that you would need to do, even to get the simple things in life, like a chair, let alone the more complex things in life. Do you see what I'm saying? How interdependent we are in human society. So when you work, you are offering your services to other people who need it, and they're offering their services to you. Now, we also mentioned this last time, that many of the great thinkers of the world have had a negative view of work, and this has seeped into the church, into the history of the church. And some of these negative views of work are still with us today. And I'm going to develop that a little more this morning. So I'm just kind of giving you a preview here. God takes a positive view of creation, of the material world. God was pleased with what he made. He blessed humanity. And those blessings and that goodness is never rescinded, even after the fall. Has sin affected the world? Yes. Has sin affected human society? Absolutely. But the world is still basically good. God didn't make the world out of anything bad. And so God cares for the world, and he's even going to redeem the world. And so I'm saying that because our work is all a part of God caring for his creation. God cares for his creation. And later we're going to look at some stuff that Martin Luther said, because it's Reformation Sunday, right? We got to talk about Martin Luther. God is going to redeem this world. That's a part of redemption, and he cares for it now, and he cares for it through our work. God doesn't obviously come down from heaven and do everything for us. That's not the original intent of creation, because the world was given to us to manage and care for. Who said this? Some writer said, you know, you look at a garden and then you look at a vacant lot and you say, like, the vacant lot, that's God's work. You know, if you just leave a vacant lot to God, what is it eventually? What does it look like? It's just, you know, it's overgrown. But a garden, that's something that we do with God's creation. We shape it and form it and fashion it. One of the books that I'm using for this series is by a gentleman named Lester de Coster, or de Coster, good Dutch Reformed writer. He says this: that work is how we make ourselves useful to others, and they make themselves useful to us. That's what I've been saying, but that's actually kind of where I got that idea. Work is how we make ourselves useful to others, and they make themselves useful to us. And that is really what creates society. You know, the difference between civilization and uncivilization is work. It really is. There, without work, there's no civilization. Think about it. We often talk to missionaries, you know. They go to other parts of the world, and some of these other parts of the world, like, they don't have any roads. You know, you talked about our friends that went to Africa, you know. One of the things I always say about Africa is there's no roads, you know. That's what it would be like. If nobody worked on that, it wouldn't be any roads, you know. Think of all the things that we just wouldn't have unless somebody made it. Somebody put it there. Right.
But the kids run into in Indonesia.
Sure.
It's not that everybody's striving
right.
to get a bigger car. If you've got a little motor scooter, they put like 6 or 7 people on one of those little vessels.
I know.
Scary.
Yeah.
Pray for my family in Indonesia.
It makes me thankful, though. You know, if you think about it, it makes you thankful for all the folks that do work, the work that you can't do. You know, I can never build a road by myself. Think what would happen if all the trash collectors suddenly went on strike? Jonathan's a trash collector. What if all of Congress went on strike? Congress didn't go to work anymore. Okay. Now hang on. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't use that as an example. But what would happen to the country? What if all the garbage men went on strike? What would happen to the country? You could argue that garbage men are much more important than Congress. Okay, so there's work that has to be done, and we should be thankful for people that do it, especially work that's, you know, maybe a little bit grimy. Let me summarize this, and then we'll start getting into some the meat of the lessons this morning. There are two extreme views of work, and what we're kind of going to do this morning is reconcile these two extremes and come to a biblical understanding of work. So in the secular thought world, there's two extreme views of work. One is that work is a necessary evil and an obstacle to the good life of the mind. That's the Greek philosophers. That's the Church of the Middle Ages. Okay? And especially as you look at what happened with the monasteries. Okay? And I guess the... What are the nunneries called? The
convents.
Yeah, too. Actually, that view of work lives on in the modern world. Okay, we kind of see it, I think, as you mentioned last time, we kind of see it in the white collar, blue collar division, you know, that if you're really lucky, you get a white collar job where you don't really have to do any physical labor, you know, and if you're not so lucky and blessed, you have a blue collar job and you have to work with your hands. Okay. But in the modern world, a modern thinker who took that same view of work was Sigmund Freud. And what Freud said basically is that, okay, look, the real thing that we want to do as human beings is just satisfy our pleasure. We have a desire for pleasure, whether it be sexual or otherwise. And that's our main goal in life, is just to satisfy ourselves. But of course, if we just do that all the time, civilization would collapse. So work is a necessary evil. You have to stop having sex and go to work once in a while, Freud would say. Okay, because if you don't, civilization will collapse. Therefore, work is just a necessary evil. We trade time away from the things that really give us pleasure to go to work so that, you know, we don't totally collapse on ourselves. That's one view of work in the modern, how that's still there in the modern mindset. Another extreme view of work, which really developed during the Renaissance and during what we call the Enlightenment and the period of where the modern world began to take shape. This view of work is that work is the ultimate in human expression by which mankind can conquer nature and become gods on earth. And that view of work was adopted by who is probably one of the most influential thinkers, like it or not, in the modern world, Karl Marx. And Marx had a lot to say about work. And what Marx said is that what we need to do is we need to set the worker free from exploitation and oppression so that humanity, if we do that, we can become masters of the world and we can create a utopian society. That's what Marxism was about. You see maybe some problems with that? That's kind of the other extreme of work, right? On one hand, you do everything you can to get out of work. On the other hand, work is everything to becoming, you know, the perfect world. We're going to make ourselves the perfect world by work. That was that's Marxism, really, in a nutshell. So how do you reconcile those two extreme views? Well, we're going to try to do that. Those are the two extremes. Now we're going to look at what is the biblical model, and that's the title of this lesson today, Christian Models of Work. And what we're going to do is we're going to discuss two different ways that Christians have looked and that the Bible teaches us about work. And the first one is one that we've already introduced because it's so foundational. There's really no way I couldn't kind of throw it out there that work is service to others. That's the first thing we'll talk about as a Christian model of work, okay? I want us to turn to a passage in 1 Corinthians 7. It's just a short little verse. If someone would like to just go ahead and read that, 1 Corinthians 7:17. Whoever gets it first, just start reading.
Only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and to which God has called him. This is my rule in all the churches.
Okay. So now there's a lot of context here. I don't want to take verses out of context, but we don't have time to really do a full-fledged exegesis of this text. But what Paul is saying is that to a Christian, whatever you are called to do in life, in what we would call the secular world, is a divine calling. Okay? So if you are a bricklayer and you become a Christian, should you stop being a bricklayer? Paul says no. Keep right on laying bricks. If you're a doctor and you become a Christian, should you not be a doctor anymore? No. You keep right on being a doctor. If that's where God puts you, if that's your vocation, that your calling, if that's what it is, keep right on doing it as a Christian. Stay right where you are in life, okay? Do you see what he's saying? Everything that we do in what we would call the secular world can be done for the Lord and is, in fact, a divine calling. Now, obviously, there are some jobs that God does not want anybody doing, okay? And probably should go without saying that we pretty much know what those are when we see them. Like, that is not a legitimate form of work. It doesn't help anybody. It may hurt other people, actually. So those are obviously Christians. There are some jobs Christians should not do, nobody should do. Certainly not if you're a Christian. But otherwise, wherever you are in life, you become a Christian, you go right on doing that. Okay? Now that's the biblical view. How did that change in the Middle Ages? Because it did change. The view of work in the Middle Ages with the rise of monasticism, that changed. Because in the Middle Ages, if you really wanted to be a good Christian, what did you do? You were a bricklayer and you become a Christian, but you really want to go all in on this thing. What do? Become a monk. You don't lay bricks anymore. You join a monastery, you join an order, you take vows, and you pray all day, and you get up and pray all night, and you do everything spiritual, you see. And that's the view of work that crept in to the church. But it's not a biblical view of work. So we don't have to leave our careers when we become Christians. You serve God, whatever you're doing out there in society, you go out there and you serve God and do it. Secular jobs, so to speak, secular jobs are God's calling to, not just religious jobs or being a pastor or being a missionary or something like that. So God does give spiritual gifts to people in the church to build up the church. But God also gives gifts to us that we use when we go out and we work in society. Okay? So, if you're a good teacher, you could become a pastor. I did for 10 years, You could become a pastor and be a pastor teacher in the church and make your living that way. You could do that. But, if you're a good communicator and a good teacher, you could become a high school teacher too. And you could serve God that way. You could become a college professor and get a PhD and serve God. You could do that. You see, you could teach in the church or you could teach somewhere else. And you're still serving God both places. Now, it's easy for us to say, the people who are really in the front lines or really in the trenches are the pastors and the missionaries and stuff. And we're reverting to that old mindset of clergy laity and where there's spiritual work and then there's non-spiritual work and there's secular work and there's sacred work. All of those distinctions are not biblical. They're just not biblical. Everybody on the same page about that? Okay. I hope you are. I hope you're a good Protestant. Because I'm telling you right now, that's one of the foundational things I'm going to mention later when Martin Luther really got going. Martin Luther said, you know what? We're all priests. There's no such thing as clergy, laity, priests, and lay people. The whole church is called to be, everybody is a priest unto God. When you go to work, you're a priest unto God. You still are, okay? So, extremely important principle. Now, let's do a little bit of application here. That's the principle. How should we apply that principle? If it's true that work is primarily about service to others, and that no matter what it is that you choose to do, as long as it's not immoral, you are doing it unto the Lord and for the good of others, let's talk a little bit of application. Here's one point of application. If that is true, it is wrong for Christians to choose a job based purely on how much money it pays or in the status that it gives in society. Do you agree with that? Is it okay to make money? Yeah. And there are some jobs that are difficult. They're involved. A lot of education, a lot of risk, maybe something like that. And they pay really well. Doctors get paid a lot of money. There's lots of other jobs. People make quite a bit of money, relatively speaking. Okay. But it is not. The Christian view of work does not allow you to simply go after a job just because you're going to make a lot of money doing it. Or just because I want to be a doctor, because doctors kind of have this, they have this a lot of this respect in our society. Oh, you're a doctor, good for you, And there's lots of other jobs that are like that too. Movie stars and entertainers and, athletes. And it doesn't mean people shouldn't become doctors or athletes or anything else, but that should not be the driving force behind our career choices just for money. Does everybody agree with that? Okay.
I don't have any other comment.
Okay. Thanks for that.
What are you saying that the consideration should be wanting to help people?
I'm just saying that shouldn't be the driving consideration. I'm going to choose this job just because it's going to make a lot of money or bestow.
I can agree with that. Okay. But I think that is a consideration.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. I'm not saying it isn't.
A lot of times when you pursue a job that's going to make a lot of money, you have in mind that you can use that to help people
sure.
with other things.
Right.
I guess I misunderstood.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I think it is a consideration.
Yeah, let me clarify that. I don't mean to say that money is not a consideration. You have to live, first of all. And there is such a thing, as a market wage. If you're going to do a certain job, you should be paid whatever the going rate is for that job. And if you're in a situation where you're not, I don't think it's necessarily wrong to either ask for a raise or go to another job where you would be paid. But I'm saying, I'm just going to do this because I can make a lot of money. And that's really the only – and I think that's a real problem with – I think there are people who become doctors, for example. I don't know why I keep going back to that. But who it's just such a high-ranking thing in our society, because they want to make a lot of money. They're not interested in curing patients or helping, researching how to cure cancer or something like that. I just want the money and the status. I want to be a doctor so I can buy a new Corvette and, get all the women. And that's kind of the way it is in our society, and it's not a biblical view of work.
Wouldn't that be the same as I want to be a college professor instead of a high school teacher because there's more prestige,
a
bigger paycheck goes with being
attached
to a university or whatever.
Now maybe you should be a college professor instead of there are certain jobs that people absolutely don't want to do, right? Like, I don't want to do that job because it's way down here. And so we kind of get a little bit of an elitist mentality, that I'm only going to do the jobs that are, that are kind of, because I'm somewhere up here and I'm better than this guy that goes out and does this other job,
I think we've lost sight of the fact that there are certain people in society that, and I know several of them, and I don't want to say they've limited their expectation, but they're happy and fulfilled with what may be considered a well thing.
Right.
And their peace and of mind, that's got to be worth a lot. I was a money grabber and did all the wrong things for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And I admire people that have that ability, that they didn't have to strive, but they found fulfillment.
Well, it's kind of the idea is now in our culture is that if you don't go to college, you're a failure. You know? Oh, your son's going to be a plumber? Oh, well, my son's going to be a doctor. You know? That's the way people think. You know? And it's the flesh.
After class, I have a joke to tell you.
Okay. I can't wait.
It's about carpenters.
Okay. So here's another application of this principle. Okay? So remember, we're talking about how work is a service to God and to others, okay? Another application is that we should not take jobs that do not fit our gifts. Well, I already said that one. Hang on. Here's the second one. We should seek to do our work with excellence because we are serving God and others. So whatever you do, Paul said, whether in word or deed, to all to the glory of God. So if you're a carpenter, Dorothy Sayers, Christian author, she said, the first thing that should be told if a carpenter becomes a Christian, the first thing the church should tell him is to make good tables. You know, Josh, you're a Christian, make good stuff. You know, whatever it is you do, do it well.
But see, that used to be part of our work ethic that you were talking about earlier, disappearing.
Right.
It's because you didn't have to be a Christian to believe in producing a good product.
Yeah.
And now,
God is not glorified and people are not helped by shoddy work. And we're seeing this in our culture everywhere. It just seems like there's a lot of shoddiness.
I'd go a step further and say that, and you see it in a society like what we live in, that's utilitarian.
Yeah.
That if what you're saying is correct, that doing something not just well, but putting some beauty into it because it is glorifying God.
Right.
You know.
I'll give you an example. Were you done? Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give you an example. What was it? Was it Friday? I think it was Friday afternoon. I was out on the road, and so I stopped for lunch. And so I went into this restaurant and sat down, and there were these two waitresses behind the counter. And these girls were having the time of their lives. I mean, they were laughing and talking and just running around. And the one girl came up to me and she had a big smile on her face and she welcomed me and she was just acted like she was just so happy to be there. And the other girl started telling me jokes. She was like telling me jokes as I was sitting there. And they were just going around to all the customers and it was phenomenal. It was just great to be in there. And I told her so afterwards. I said, you seem really happy. She said, well, I am happy. What a difference it makes, you know. To do a job like that, which, you know, is pretty low on the totem pole of careers, waitressing, you know. But she obviously was enjoying herself, and she did a fantastic job. Both of them did. And that's just an example of what can happen when people really put themselves into it. Now, I want to talk a little bit, under this heading, I want to talk a little bit about what Luther had to say about work. Not only because it's Reformation Sunday. This was going to be, I was going to say this anyway, just it's great timing, I guess, that it's Reformation Sunday. But Luther had a lot to say about work in the Christian life. And, you know, one of the things that he was doing, of course, was going against the Catholic view that those who work in the church are the ones doing the spiritual work. Okay? And the term that was used for, like, people who, like, clergymen and monks and I guess nuns as well, they were called the spiritual state. People who were doing that were the spiritual state. So everybody else was the non-spiritual state, I guess. Luther said, and I quote, all Christians are truly of the spiritual state. And therefore, Luther concluded, that means that all the work that you do, even if you're not a monk or a nun or a priest, all the work you do is meaningful. Because 1 Peter 2:9, right? We're all kings and priests. Let's actually read that verse. Would somebody like to go to 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9? This is the perfect Reformation Day text. 1 Peter 2:9.
But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light.
So Luther said, well, clearly, all Christians are priests. And so the work that you do is done in worship and in service to God. And that really became one of the critical teachings of the Reformation, by the way, is the priesthood of all believers. Really important. Something else that Luther said about work is he argued that everything necessary for an orderly society, I think I mentioned this already, was a gift of God and comes through all kinds of work. In other words, God provides for what we need in life through the work of people. And in his catechism, Luther was talking about the Lord's Prayer. And when he got to the Our Daily Bread part, he expanded on that. And he says, you got to understand when you pray for your daily bread, what all is involved in you getting your daily bread. Think of all the work that is done by other people so that you have your daily necessities. It's astounding. God cares for the world through the work of other people. And Luther actually said that when other people are doing work to so that you can have bread and live, he said, those people are wearing the masks of God. In other words, God is sort of in disguise, incognito, serving your needs through the work of someone else. It's quite a thought. Luther even said, and I quote, God milks the cows through the vocation of the milkmaids. Somebody's got to milk a cow, or you know, you wouldn't have any milk for your coffee in the morning, which would be a tragedy. So something else Luther said is that God gives us work to do, just like parents give children chores to build their character. So God's going to use work to work on us and to build our Christian character. I think that's absolutely exactly what happens. Now, something else, of course, that Luther discovered was his great discovery in Romans, you know, that the just shall live by faith. And, you know, he read Paul in Romans, and that was really the verse that, you know, kind of saved Luther. You know, he was a monk himself, and he was crawling up the steps of St. Peter's Basilica and kissing every step, you know, to try to get as much merit as he could, and he never found peace. And then he read, the just shall live by faith. And he realized what the gospel was saying is that we are made right with God. We are made righteous with God, not on the basis of our works, our religious works, but on the basis of our faith. And so for Luther, that revolutionized everything for him, including how he viewed work. And what Luther said is that if you apply justification by faith to work, he said there's two kind of applications of that. The first is that if we're not saved by religious works, then you can't have this distinction between doing religious work and doing secular work. That all falls apart. And second, Luther said, justification frees us from seeking salvation through any kind of work, whether it be sacred or secular. And the dirty little secret is that there's a lot of Americans who are secular. They're definitely not seeking salvation through religious work. Okay? But they are seeking salvation. And you know what they're seeking salvation through? Their career. And this is, we're more wrapped up in this, I think, in our culture than we've ever been. That most people, especially men, seek their self-esteem and their significance in life through their career, through their jobs. That's why a lot of men, you know, retire and die. Yeah.
Some people are looking forward to that with me. But you're talking about, we're so wrapped up in our work. What do you make of all the people who quit their job and nobody really knows why, and I wonder how they're going to support
Well, I definitely think it. I mean, Paul said, you know, if you don't work, you shouldn't eat. I think it's wrong to not work. I know.
But Paul's not writing a check for Social Security.
Right. Something else Luther said about justification is that once you understand that you're not saved by your works, whether it be your religious works or your secular works, not any kind of work, it liberates you then to do your work with joy. Right? I mean, there's nothing worse than just working for a paycheck, right? Whether that be working for God and trying to earn his favor or going to a job just for the paycheck. See, if you're set free from that, then you can do the work with excellence, then you can do with joy, then you can really meet the needs of others just out of a sense of love. No obligation. I'm just doing this for you. I'm not looking for anything in return. I don't need anything. I've got everything. My Father in heaven provides everything I need. He's already accepted me. I'm not depending on this job for my self-esteem. Have you ever worked with someone closely, by the way, who's literally their self-esteem was their job? It is hell. It's terrible to work with people like that. Because something's going to go wrong. And we're going to talk about that later because work is cursed. Work is not a curse, but work is cursed. And when something goes wrong, some people are just shattered. Failure just shatters them. They go jump off a bridge. You know, it's terrible. It's a terrible thing. So, one other thing here, and then I need to hurry to this second thing because we're running out of time. But another aspect of this, and I already mentioned this, when we're working for the Lord, when we're working to serve other people, we do things with excellence. And that's one of the key things about work is that work has to be done with competence, right? It has to be done you have to be able to do your job, is what I'm saying. The first duty of as I mentioned this quote from Dorothy Sayers, I love this quote, the first duty of a Christian carpenter is to make a good table, you know? A Christian pilot should know how to land a plane. That's the first requirement. And I mentioned that because I read this story about this airline pilot named David Cronin. I guess this was sometime in the late 80s. He was flying a 747. He was the pilot of a 747. He was flying over the Pacific Ocean, and the cargo door of the plane blew off the plane. So do you know what happens to a plane when the door blows off? You know, everything. It sucked a bunch of people out is what happened first. But all of the controls of the plane are off, okay? So this guy had to turn around. He was over the Pacific Ocean. He had to turn the plane around to go back to land and land the plane with the door off. And he did it. And nobody else died other than the people that were literally sucked out of the plane through the open door. And the people that were watching said that not only did he land the plane, he landed the plane as if there was absolutely nothing wrong with the plane. And everybody was amazed. So somebody was interviewing him and they asked him, they said, what was the first thing that went through your mind when the door blew off the plane? He said, well, I said a prayer and then I got back to business. That's good. Sometimes that's what you got to do. All right, so let me just stop for a minute. Does anybody have anything percolating in your mind? Okay. All right, so the first model of Christian work is that we work to serve God and to serve others. Here's the second principle. Work is cultivation. And we've already mentioned this as well. From the book of Genesis, that God's original calling for man was to fill the earth and subdue it. So let's talk a little bit more now about what that actually means, okay? What does it mean when God said to mankind to fill the earth and subdue it? Any initial thoughts? What was he calling us to do? What is the work of filling the earth and subduing it exactly? What do you think?
Cultivating the garden.
Yeah? Literally, right? That's what they were literally supposed to do. Yeah.
Or quite literally called to have families.
Yeah.
Raise children.
Right.
And be productive.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there was two people on the earth at this time. Now, God could have just made a bunch of people, right? He could have. But God said, no, it's your job to create a human society. It's your job. He's not just talking about reproduction, I don't think. Like, have as many kids as you can. I think he's literally talking about, because this is, when he says it to Adam and Eve, he's saying it to the whole human race, because they're the only two people there. He's saying, create a society. Create a society. An interconnected society. You think there's some creativity involved in that, too, where he says, fill the earth and subdue it? I mean, one of the aspects of God is God's creativity, and we're made in His image. We have the capacity to be creative. Now we can't make something out of nothing like God did. You know, God made. Not only did He make the world, but He formed the stuff. You know, the raw materials. We already have the raw materials. I love that joke where, if I can remember it, the guy says something like, I challenge God, I can make stuff just like you can, you know. And so he starts getting down, he starts getting some dirt together to make something. God says, hey, wait a minute, stop, get your own dirt, you know. So we can't do that, but we have the raw materials on which to create new things. And I think that's one of the, God was literally telling us, be artists, be engineers, build things. You know, this idea that somehow God just meant us to be naked and in a garden forever, that's not what God intended at all. He meant for us to build things and create things and write symphonies and paint and you know, all those things are good things. Those are not, now, they are still impacted by sin. I understand that. And the pyramids were built with slave labor. I understand that. Okay. But God called us to make things. There's hidden beauty and potential in creation that we can unlock. Making a garden is probably the best example of that. You take a wild field where there's just a bunch of, you know, brambles growing, and you, with some work, you make it into a beautiful garden. There's elements in the ground that if they're just sitting in the ground, they're not doing any good. But if you mine them and you forge them, you can make steel. Can make something out of it. I was just thinking the other day, I just bought a new car. I'm so thankful for the German engineers that made my car. You know, I could never do that myself. Those are good things. God wants us to make things. So think of all the things that leads to. That leads to science, medical technology, all kinds of technology, art, agriculture. All those disciplines are wrapped up in God telling us to fill the earth and subdue it. So work is creating culture, it's creating and sustaining human civilization. All of that's there. Yeah. Yeah.
Stewardship too. It's not just creating,
oh, yeah.
It's like keeping things from decaying.
That's right. It's interesting that you should say that, because that's exactly what you do. Yeah. Yeah, we're stewards of it. You know, some people have said, some people have kind of objected to the idea of subduing the earth, you know, but that it clearly doesn't mean exploiting the earth. It clearly doesn't mean destroying the earth or polluting the earth. But there is a sense in which God, the idea is kind of like there's a lump of clay there. And when you subdue the lump of clay, a potter subdues the lump of clay. He doesn't destroy it. He crafts something according to what he has in his mind. That's subduing it. That's the idea of subduing. Take something raw and formless and to impose your will on it to create whatever it is you want to create. That's what God did. And he calls us to do exactly the same thing. So we've got just a couple of minutes left here. Let me pause again. Anybody have any? I know I talk a lot. I talk fast sometimes, but I don't want to stifle anybody. Since it is, did I mention it's Reformation Sunday? I might have mentioned that. Because it is, I already talked about Luther, so I have to talk about the other guy, Calvin. Calvin had a lot to say about work as well. And just to close this out, here are some things that Calvin said about work. Calvin, first of all, he attacked monasticism as well. And Calvin recognized that monasticism was really not, it wasn't based on scripture, it was based on Aristotle. We talked about this, the Greek philosophers. Aristotle clearly taught that, you know, physical manual labor is to be avoided. The thing is to have the life of the mind. And Calvin said, that's not a Christian idea. That's not a biblical idea. Calvin also argued that this false view of work that was evident in Aristotle, that the church had kind of adopted by osmosis, it was a flawed view of God himself. The idea is that God is like kind of just pure mind, pure spirit. And Calvin said, no. Look at what God was doing there in the Garden of Eden. He was making stuff. He was making man out of the clay. He was interested in the world, not disinterested in the world like the old pagan deity. So it's a false view of God. It's not just a false view of work. It's rooted in a false view of God, an idolatrous view of God. Calvin also argued that the God of the Bible I kind of already said that. Let me move on. Calvin criticized also, and this is right at the monks, okay? He criticized those who engaged in pointless speculations that didn't lead to a transformed life. So, in other words, what Calvin was saying is that when you go to church on Sunday and you listen to someone talk about theology and talk about the Bible, the point is that when you go to work Monday morning, that has an impact on how you live your life and do your job. That's the point. We're not here to just have these grand speculations about the nature of God. And no, truth is practical. It makes a difference in how we behave. And, you know, what are we doing with most of our time out there? We're working, right? So the first impact that your Christianity ought to have on your life is in how you do your work. So I think we're just about out of time at this point. I haven't heard a bell yet, but let me just stop again and see if anybody has any final thoughts or questions. So the Christian models of work. What is work? Work is service to God and to others. Therefore, it's not a curse. Work is cultivation. It's taking, it's acting like God in being creative and taking what God has made and making new things out of it, also to serve others and to glorify God. So tomorrow's Monday, and most of us have an opportunity to do just that in some way, shape, or form. So happy Reformation Sunday. Thank God for Luther and Calvin and all the others. And I should mention too, it's interesting that modern Catholic thought, the modern view of secular work by the Catholic Church, is almost exactly that of the Reformers. They completely changed their view of work. And Pope John Paul wrote what they call an encyclical about work, in which he almost verbatim said exactly what Luther and Calvin had said about work, that people who are not in the priesthood, who are not monks and nuns, when they go out to work, they go out to work to glorify God and to serve others, and that is meaningful to God. And so that old view of the Reformation had at least that impact on the church. They did at least reform the Catholic Church's view of work. That's interesting, isn't it? That on, at least on that point, in Western Christianity, we disagree on almost everything. But on the subject of work, there is actually now a lot of agreement between Protestants and Catholics on what the meaning of work and the purpose of work is for Christians.
They sort of had their own Reformation.
Yeah.
Came many, many years later.
That's true. You're right. Yeah. It didn't change everything in Catholicism, but the Catholic Church of today is definitely not the Catholic Church of the Middle Ages. And I think it's because of the Reformation. Those things would have never happened without what, you know, Luther starting, you know, nailing those points on the door and risking his life. He risked his life, you know, and then Calvin with his great mind and writings and so much impact, it literally just changed history. And we really should be thankful for it. We don't worship those men, you know. They're just men. But they were used by God, and they changed history, and we wouldn't be where we are today without what happened in the Reformation. So, anything else? All right, I'm going to go ahead and dismiss us then. I thought we were supposed to go from 11 to 11:50. I'm not really sure. But that's kind of all I had to say. That's all, folks.
That's all, folks.
Have a good week.
Enjoy your work.
Yes, enjoy your work. Serve God. You.